Hello, everyone, and welcome to the next episode of Block Talk, where we talk about everything Azure and blockchain all up. My name is Ziad Rajabi. I'm a program manager on the blockchain team.
And my name is Mark Mercuri. I'm a PM on the blockchain team as well.
In today's episode, we're going to cover a couple of things. We're going to give you guys a complete walkthrough of how to build your first application on Azure Blockchain Workbench. Specifically, what we're going to do is we're going to cover a couple of things. We're going to give you guys the walkthrough of the entire lifecycle. So talking about how you actually think about building your story, how you define that story, and how you build it and design it for a blockchain application, what kinds of things you need to consider when you're coding it, and then how do you actually go take that application and start using it in Workbench. And now, of course, before you get started here, we're relying on Azure Blockchain Workbench. So please go ahead and deploy that if you haven't done so already. There are several different documents out there that we have either on Docs, you can go to the azure.com or our portal to get an insight in terms of how to actually go deploy it. But once you've deployed it, really the next steps are defining that particular story. So on that note, let me hand it over to Mark so where he can talk about sort of defining that story for a particular case that we have in mind.
Yeah, sounds great, Ziad. So we're going to start with one we call Simple Marketplace. It's one of our entry-level contracts. And the story here is actually pretty simple. Imagine whether it's Craigslist or another online marketplace site where you have owners and buyers and they want to be able to sell goods to one another. And here, as you saw on the slide before, we want to go ahead and define the application roles. And here we've got two. We've got an owner and we've got a buyer. Pretty straightforward. The owner is someone who wants to sell on the marketplace. There's a buyer who wants to buy from the marketplace. Now, the one thing that is interesting, and you'll look back at this as you get more advanced with Workbench, is that an owner and a buyer can be distinct to an instance. So I could be selling an Xbox to Ziad, and he would be the buyer in that case. In another case, he could be selling me a Surface Pro, and he would be the owner, and I would be the buyer in that case. But we've got our two application roles. We've got an owner and a buyer. Now, the next thing that we want to take a look at is, what are the states? And so if we think about a smart contract, it's kind of like a state machine workflow, right, Ziad?
That's right. I think the easiest way for us to describe sort of what a smart contract or application looks like on blockchain is think of it as like a state machine. It starts in a particular state. You have different people that can take actions depending on what state it is, and each of those actions may or may not result in a transition to another state. So you're just defining the state machine.
Exactly. And so let's look at the states for this particular contract, and we'll sort of walk through what the process looks like so we can see where the states come in. You can say that I'm going to go ahead and put up my Xbox for sale. And it's not because I don't love Xboxes, it's because I want a new Xbox One X. And so I'm going to go ahead and put that up for sale, and I'm going to sort of make that available. And so once it's been put up for sale, it happens as part of the constructor for my contract. We'll talk about that in a moment. It now becomes, and it goes in a state of item available. And at that point, anyone who is in the buyer role can go ahead and place an offer. And so once someone has placed an offer, we're going to go ahead and transition to the offer place state, which indicates that the seller has made an offer. And so once we're in the offer place state, I can go ahead and decide whether or not I want to accept the offer or not. And if I do go ahead and accept the offer, I can go ahead and this will move to the accepted state. Now, you can see down below, we have a nice state machine diagram that our colleague Ramya has put together for us. You'll find these for all the samples we have online in GitHub. And you can see here that we've got the item available and offer placed and accept. And so that in yellow, you can see that yellow line, that's what we call the happy path. You can also say, what if Ziad didn't offer me a lot of money for the Xbox and I really did not want to sell it at that price? Well, what happens now is I can go ahead and reject that offer, and then we transition back to that other state item available. So you can see here we're transitioning to and from states based on the interactions and the actions that are taken in our smart contract.
So I think one thing to talk about when we're defining these things here, Mark, mm-hmm. is you're basically designing the system. And one of the things that I know we both have seen is when we interact with a lot of customers and the customers are building up these solutions, they're dealing with other customers. It's a consortium.
Correct.
And these designs here, at least the depiction of the state machine plus the different states and the roles, I think give a good opportunity for the consortium to review and design and give feedback before any coding has begun.
Yeah, I think one of the important things about blockchain and one of the key value pieces of it is that it is amongst multiple parties. And so what you're doing now is you're now taking a business process that's going to span multiple organizations. And we've talked to consortiums of 30 people, mm-hmm. or 30 organizations. And so you can imagine, sometimes it's hard for two companies to agree. Imagine 30 of them. And so having something on paper that people can rationalize and have discussions over is super helpful. The other thing that you're going to find is that there's certain nuances where you might want to break those off into other smart contracts. Mm-hmm. So you might say, hey, in country X, we have to do it this way. In country Y, we have to do this piece a different way. You can actually break those out into to other contracts. But by starting off with a drawing, you're going to learn a lot more about the process and really make sure when you sit down to code, it really is going to match to what you need. That consortium context really is a game changer. Mm-hmm. And so this is just absolutely critical.
Yeah, I think of it as a sort of good design principles before you actually go and start implementing.
Right. I think, you know, design before coding is always a good idea. It's an especially good idea when it comes to
unless you were so good, you could just do it all in one shot.
Well,
from the get-go.
Yeah,
right.
Maybe.
Yeah, right.
All right. So shall we go ahead and look at the code here? We're going to pull up trusty VS Code. Now, if this is your first application, you might have noticed that we've got some nice syntax coloring in here. A gentleman named Juan Blanco, who's done a really nice plugin for Visual Studio Code. So if you go ahead and click over here on extensions, and you go ahead and search for Solidity, his extension will show up at the top of the list, and I highly recommend it. And so what we're going to do now, though, is if you remember the slide that Ziad showed initially, we start with sort of defining the metadata for the configuration file. And so if we think about what Workbench is going to do for you, it's going to build an app for you automatically. And so what it does is it takes a smart contract, which effectively is the code you're going to run, and then it takes some metadata about the business process, that state machine workflow and roles and which states can go to which functions go transitioning to which states, those sorts of things, and allows us to build an app for you. So this is really about business metadata. So let's just take a quick walk through that. Now, what we've done for today is we've created a version of Simple Marketplace called the Channel 9 Marketplace, or CH9 Marketplace. Other than the naming, it's effectively the same contract we have online at GitHub. Now, you can see here we've got an application name, a display name, and a description. Now, some of this information may or may not be shown in the user experience that you're using, but we also put everything in an off-chain database as well, and we have database views. So if you're building your own apps, all this information is available to you. Now remember we talked about our roles, we've got them right here. So inside the application roles section we have an owner and we have a buyer. And then we have workflows. And so workflows are really representing that state machine workflow that Ziad talked about a little bit earlier. So we have a name for it, we have a display name. The nice thing here is that you may get one of our samples or you may get something from the community and they may call it something else, but you can go ahead and display it what you like. Also super helpful in a consortium context where maybe they speak French or Italian or German and really would like to have this description in the language of their choice. Now, one of the things that we get in Workbench in the generated application is it identifies who can create new types of contracts. In this case, we're saying that someone in the owner role is allowed to go do that. So if I were to log in as a buyer and I wasn't in an owner role, I wouldn't be able to do that. And then just as you saw in that diagram, we're going to start off in item available. Now, that's great to get started, but let's talk about state. And so we've talked about different states you can transition into, but what about data that I can have on the contract that I can read in the UI and display to my end users? And so here in the property sections, you're going to have sets of properties that are defined on the contract, and then you can expose out here into the user interface. So you really only need to have one property in your contract to use Workbench, and that's state. And the reason why you have this is this provides hints and a clue back to the user experience, whether it's ours or something you build on top of this, to let you know which state you're in and how to drive user experience and which buttons you should show to people at which time and what type of experience you should render.
Also, I think the other thing that's really interesting about the properties piece itself is that it's being also synchronized to an off-chain storage. So we're using that properties list to store in, let's say, a SQL database or whatever database you have attached to Workbench. And what you can do is you can start running visual queries or visualizations on that data or machine learning on that data. And the properties help us define sort of what that data is being stored there.
Absolutely. I mean, the data we have in the properties is the data we care about. That's typically when you put into things like Power BI. Mm-hmm. The other thing that's really important is, you know, we're sharing property information when we bubble up events on the back end through whether it's Service Bus or Event Grid that you're using, and allows you to specify information that's great to show on screen, but also things you can take action on later on. So, you know, we always talk about this scenario where people have ice cream and the ice cream is melting, and you want to make sure you contact the owner. And so what you can do is say, hey, this contract has been told by the IoT sensors that it's out of compliance. And so that's a property. Mm-hmm. And so you can imagine if you went to a state that was out or had a property that went to a value of out of compliance, you'd want to send an alert, like an email or an SMS. And you'll actually see how to do that in future episodes of Block Talk.
Very cool.
So I'm going to go through here the rest of the properties pretty quickly here. You can see here we've got description, asking price, the offering price, who's the buyer in this instance, and who's the owner. All the things you'd expect based on the diagram we did in advance. Now you see here, this is the constructor. And so this is basically going to drive which data elements you're asked for when you try to create a contract, and maps to the constructor on the smart contract that you've developed. And we'll see that in just a second. And here you can see we've got two properties, two parameters here. There's a description and a price, really the bare minimum you want to have for marketplace there. And you can see here that we've got different functions that are in there, and these align to what we saw on the state machine workflow. And we'll just take a look at one as an example. So you can see here that we can, there's one called make offer. Display name is make offer, it has a description. We've got the different parameters that can be passed in here. In this case, it's just an offer price. And you can see here there's a type of money. And you might say, hey, this contract that you're talking about and for Workbench, we know you use Solidity. Solidity doesn't have a money type. So what is that all about? Well, one of the things we do here in this configuration file, remember it's about business context. And so this also provides hints back to the user experience. And so in this case, I can say that there's a numeric value coming back, but display it as a money. And so that can mean everything from filtering it a little bit differently to how you might display it in terms of putting dollar signs or things like that in front of it. Now we've got these other functions here, which are pretty straightforward. We've got our states definitions. And so states are gonna look pretty similar, like name, display name, description, but there are a couple things that are different. And so percent complete. So one of the things you'll see in the UI, and then if you wanna build your own UIs, it really shows you if this is a process, and think of it as we'll show it in the shape of sort of like a donut, sort of progressing around the circle of life for this particular contract. This tells the UI how far along should it be. In this case, we can see it's about 20% through. And you also see a style that says, and here we reference a success. And this is if something were to go to a failure or success, we can make sure we're driving the UI in a particular way. Imagine that scenario we just talked about where it went out of compliance. You might want to provide a visual cue, hey, we're in a failure state and we need to go take a look at that. So then we have transitions here, Z. So we've got, I'm in a state, but remember we said if I go and do something, I can move to another state. And so here, an item available, which happens right after I put it up for sale, we can go ahead and transition. And you can see here that the transition, there's one transitions available, and we can see here that the buyer can go ahead and do that. There's a description here that says make an offer for this asset, the function that it maps to, and then what's the state that it can go to after this. And it says states plural because depending on what I do, if I accept or reject, I could potentially go to different states. So if you remember back the state diagram we looked at, if I accepted it, it could go to accepted, and if I rejected it, it could go back to item available.
So one question for you, Mark. There is, I see allowed roles and allowed instance roles. Could mm-hmm. you explain the difference between those two?
Sure. So in some cases, you're going to have a role that is sort of for the entire application. You could have an instance role, which is specific to this particular instance. So Ziad, you could be assigned as both a buyer and a seller in the application, mm-hmm. but in this instance, you could be a buyer.
Right. And I think in this particular case here, the transition for when the item is available, that you can place an offer.
Yep.
Because it's saying allowed role buyer, it just means anybody who is a buyer can place that basically an offer for that particular item.
Yes. And then this is this actually came about from the very early versions of Workbench. Mm-hmm. We had a version of this contract. And then I think someone asked a question, I think it might have been you, Ziad. I said, hey, but what if I want to be a buyer and I want to be a seller? And so that's sort of the origin of the instance roles. And we found that as we went beyond sort of this initial scenario, and we went to a bunch of others, you're going to have a number of cases like that where my role may be different based on the context of a given contract. Mm-hmm. Okay, and so you can see here are different states. We've sort of gone through that. Down here we've got 200, and now we're done. And so you can see at the very end, we get to 100 at success, and there are no transitions. And that really represents the business contracts that we talked about when we looked at this over here. So you can see here, this here has been represented over here. We provided all the context about that, as well as identifying not just the roles, but which roles can take those actions. So, I'm not sure about you, but I like to code. So let's go ahead and dig in here into this contract. And so the contract is associated with the config. We'll show you how that's uploaded in just a minute. You can see here in this version of Workbench, we have a contract called Workbench Base, which is a contract that we inherit from. And so what do we do here? Well, you can see there's two functions here. They'll show up in the code in just a minute. Contract created and contract updated. And so one of the things that we do is we fire events back to the ledger with some metadata information, so we know how to bring this about and pull it into both the off-chain database, and then from the off-chain database it can be used in the UI and your analytics and things like that. So it provides some level of context for us to the data that's coming across. And so what you can see here is when we bring this into our Channel 9 marketplace contract, that we reference an application, and we also represent the particular contract that's here. And so this information gets sort of shared as well to provide that context. So we start off, remember we said that there was one property type you needed to have, which is a state type, and so or a state property. And that state property, which you see down here, is of type state type. And so what this does is really maps those states we had available to us inside of the documentation for the state machine. Now you can see here we've got an instance owner, so who's the person who owns this right now. We've got a description and asking price. These are all the properties we talked about and defined in the configuration file. Now we've got our constructor. Remember, it had description and price. You can see here what we're doing is we're assigning values here. Now you see your message sender is here, and so I'm not saying if I'm the owner, we're not putting Mark Mercurio in here, and so there's a reason why. Because you don't put personal identifiable information on the blockchain. We'll talk more about that over the course of the season, but the key thing to remember is the blockchain is forever. And if whether it's PII or it's information that's covered by legislation like GDPR, where people can ask to have information removed, you can't actually do that on the blockchain. So in this case, we're not referencing me as Mark Mercuri. We're using something in Solidity, which is called message.sender. And this is gonna bring my Ethereum address for me. So on the chain, I'm not Mark Mercuri, I'm 0x12345. We'll talk about that more in a minute when we assign users. Otherwise, it looks pretty straightforward. We change our state here, and then look here, we do call contract created to provide that that hint, fire that event, so Workbench can go ahead and capture that. Now you'll see here that if you've ever used JavaScript or most programming languages, it looks pretty straightforward. You may not be familiar with the revert keyword, but basically what's going to happen is if someone's trying to make an offer, if it's zero, basically we're going to go ahead and exit. If it's not equal to available, we're going to go ahead and exit. So there's a couple simple checks we do here, and then we just continue through the process. We've got reject, we've got accept, and that's it.
And I think the thing you want to do, other thing you want to note here is it says contract updated. So if you're doing one of these functions that are actually changing the state of the contract, you want to call contract updated to help give us a hint for Workbench UI of what's happening there as well.
No, absolutely. And so there's a couple key things we should talk about, right? So in this case, everything that we've referenced in the contract is also referenced in the config. Mm-hmm. And so that means they're gonna be exposed up to the user interface and all the contract methods are gonna be showing up. But in some cases, you don't wanna do that. You may have a bunch of properties and maybe it's a contract that already exists and you only want like four to go to the UI. Mm-hmm. In which case, you'd only put those four inside of the config. Or you may not use contract updated because you don't necessarily want to raise those events up. But contract updated here is key because we want to make sure that every one of these things is an event that gets mm-hmm. captured and stored in the data.
Great. So now that you have the files, let's actually show how you can push these things up to Workbench.
So here we're using a Workbench deployment that we have. You can see each of these here is a tile that represents an application we have. Everything here is actually representative of different samples we have in our GitHub site. We have a number of different scenarios that are available there. You can even see here we've got our simple marketplace down at the bottom. Now, one of the reasons is because we already have that loaded. We've changed this to the Channel 9 marketplace. And this is how easy it is to deploy an app. I'm going to click Browse. I'm going to click my Channel 9 marketplace, my configuration file. Now, what's happening is we've got some great validation checking. Imagine with JSON. In the early days when we had early private preview, People would do the JSON file and make some mistakes. We sort of capture those now. And then we also do some checking on the Solidity file, your smart contract, not just there, but also mapping the two of them together, Z. Mm-hmm. And okay, so I uploaded two files, I click deploy.
Great, so now that you've deployed it.
Yeah, let's scroll down the bottom here. Now it looks like there's two Channel 9 marketplaces. That's just because I gave it a bad name. But if I hover over it, I see it's a simple marketplace for Channel 9 swag. Mm-hmm. Channel 9 has awesome swag. If you've ever been to the Channel 9 studios, including this Channel 9 guys sticker we put on the laptop earlier today. And great, so I clicked on this, I see all my properties, but I can't do anything, Z. What do I need to do?
Yeah, so the next step you want to do here, Mark, is basically, you can see over there, it says zero members. You want to actually start assigning people. So this, since this is very simple, let's put yourself and myself in here.
Okay, so I was talking earlier about selling an Xbox. We'll go ahead and do that and see it's found my name here. Now, the cool thing is that that's actually my name in Azure Active Directory that we found. It's not actually my Ethereum address. But everything we do on chain will be with that that Ethereum address. So it's a nice UI feature where if you just use what was on the chain, it'd be pretty ugly, actually. So I'm going to go ahead and add myself there. And we'll add you here, sir, as you add Rudy. And then as a buyer. Then we're good. And so if this all worked correctly, oh, hey, look at this. You can see now that because I'm an owner, and we specified in the config that the owner can go ahead and create new contracts, this is showing up here. And so I'm going to go ahead and click new contract. And so I said I was going to sell an Xbox One, and suppose I'm going to sell that for $250.
That's pretty expensive.
We can negotiate later, see? There we go.
Okay, great. So now it looks like that smart contract is being created, it's being pushed into the blockchain network, and a new contract should be there, and now the item is available. So now what I'll do is, let me switch over to my screen over here. So you can see here that I'm signed in. This is my computer. It's me, Ziad Rajabi. And you can see I have all these apps as well, and I have access to the simple marketplace for Channel 9 swag. You'll notice because I am just a buyer, I am not able to create a new entry here because I'm not an owner, so I can't create one. But what I can do is I can interact with this item available state contract, and I can see here that the details is, you know, it's created by Mark. I can see the contract address, and I can see here that he's trying to sell an Xbox One for $250. And my offer price has not been set yet, but I can take an action to give him an offer. And I think that's really too expensive. Come on, Xbox One is old now.
So it's priceless.
I'm gonna make an offer. I'm gonna give you a more reasonable offer here. So I'll give you $120 for it.
Oh my gosh, you're not getting the controllers for that, man.
So I go ahead and create an action. A offer is being made to Mark, and you'll see here that the state has changed to an offer has been placed. So if I switch over back to Mark, Mark will see the offer has been placed as well. So he can go in there, and he can make the decision of rejecting or accepting it. So go ahead and take that action.
And so you can see here, so what's gonna happen, if Ziad was in the same screen, he's not gonna be able to take an action because it's really waiting on me. That's really driven by that state machine workflow that we looked at in the very beginning and then implemented in our code. And you know what, Z? It's gonna be tough to let go of this thing for 120, but I really want that 1X, and I'm gonna go ahead and sell it. I'm gonna accept your offer. And so you can see now there's no actions for me to take. And you also see over here that we've completed, we got to 100%. And remember we marked the different states as success. So at 100% of success, it's gonna show that as green. And then over here, we can see the different transactions that took place, right?
This is just your auto log.
Yeah. And so it's actually fairly interesting. So you've just built an application, we've tested it. And for folks who've been doing blockchain for a while, those original demos were a command line interface, and you'd see a bunch of green text in a black background scrolling through. And we used to have execs say, I'm not sure if that was the opening of the matrix or my business process. And so we've gone from that to this, where people are saying, that's not a blockchain application. It kind of looks like Office. So, and you saw how fast that went through. So every time you want to make a change too, you get that same level of experience. And so we've seen just some tremendous amount of experimentation and sort of quick iterations from some of our customers because they can just turn these things around so quickly.
So a couple of things to keep note of. I want to share some links for you guys. So number one, do check out the GitHub that we have for our marketplace. for Azure Workbench. And we have the samples here. We have a bunch of other examples and code samples. So definitely take a look at this. Also, do take a look at docs.microsoft.com. And you can, in this page, see a bunch of different documentation and content, including a reference for how to actually build up the configuration. So it gives you some details on how to build that schema, what's required and what's not. So when you're building that up, it makes it much easier.
And so one thing on that too is we talked about money being a hint. So you'll see the full list of types there, both what you have in Solidity and what's supported or not, but also some of the hints you can give back to the UX.
And in a future episode, what we're gonna do is we're gonna walk you through how to manage your actual users in the directory. And so we'll dedicate a session on that particular piece. But on that note, thank you so much for joining us. And do you want to share our handle?
That's right. So don't forget to follow us on Twitter at MSFT Blockchain. You can subscribe to us here on Channel 9 or on YouTube. Thanks for tuning in.
Yep. Thanks so much, guys.